right, we got a new podcast for you this week, everybody. And my guest is going to be coming up in just a second. A couple of thoughts. I have a new workout regimen, and it's for the chest and upper body, the shoulders. You grab a on either side of a wax sealed cereal bag, you know, like Cheerios or whatever, and you pull as hard as you can, and you can't get it open. And then you do 20 or 30 of those every day. You'll lose weight because you'll never get into the bag to eat the food, and you're working your muscles, so you'll be ripped, you'll be lean, and you'll save money because you'll never go through the bag of cereal. What is going on that they don't want you to get into that cereal bag? What I have never seen something sealed so intensely. That, I think whoever is packaging the cereal is in cahoots with people who make mustard packets. I don't know what the industrial military complex doesn't want you to know about mustard packets, but I can't get them open for the life of me. There's something in there that they don't want us to see. I don't know, maybe it's ISIS is hiding in there, or, you know, compromising photographs of the Queen of England. I have no idea, but someone's got to look into this, because there's certain things I got to have mustard. I got to have a ham and cheese sandwich, I got to have mustard. If I have cheese and crackers, I got to have mustard. If I have a hot dog, I got to have mustard. And while we're on the subject of hot dogs, can we get some, you know, raw onions at baseball stadiums and football stadiums? Is that asking too much? I mean, really. I know this is cliche, but I can, you know, fly 14 hours in a plane while watching a movie and eating French cuisine in first class and nap in a bed that's more comfortable than I am in my own bed. I can't get some diced raw onions. I mean, I don't, because I have this whole thing. What I have to do is I get the hot dog, but you have to get the hot dog at the place where they have the sausage and peppers, and then you ask the guy, you know, you duke him a little bit extra money, and he puts some cooked onions. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm in some kind of a, you know, spy movie, and I got to sort of do some black market transaction to get some onions on my hot dog. It's too exhausting. So let's get that together, okay? Let's start putting out on Twitter, we need raw onions at every concession stand in the country. I mean, I that's more important to me than healthcare. I got to be honest with you. I can live without, you know, some medicine. I can't live without, you can't eat a hot dog with just mustard on it. It's, you might as well just get some cold bologna and, you know, just swallow that. It's just, you got to have the whole, you got to have the whole setup. I think I made my point. All right, so I need all of us to address these issues by writing into our congressmen or senators right now. We need to lobby the cereal industry to make that bag more accessible. I can't believe, like, an old person over the age of 70 has eaten cereal in the last 30 years. You can't get into it. You know what they do should do is they should have a, with every box of cereal, you should get, they should just include it in it inside. Like, you know, you get a surprise in, like, Cracker Jacks, and every box there should be an M80, and you use the M80 to open the bag of cereal, and then you're in. How about that? That's don't steal that idea. That's my idea. So we got to get that taken care of. Somehow, we got to get mustard out of packets. I don't know what it is, but, you know, maybe we get some Navy SEALs in there, you know, I'm literally wrestling mustard packets to the ground and I can't get them open. And then, of course, onions. We need onions. Is where any, you can't, you never can have enough onions. Raisins, another story. I've never ever said to myself I need more raisins in my life. That's a whole other issue. Onions, very critical to life's happiness, I think. All right, my guest is Madchild, a hip-hop artist out of Canada, an underground guy. But really on the scene now, he's got a new album out called The Darkest Hour, and a really cool conversation with his past, his drug addiction, his involvement with some, you know, not some great people, how he kind of turned his life around, and what he does in his process of writing and coming up with the songs and the lyrics that he comes up with. It's, I'm always fascinated by process, as you know, And I think this is a really cool insight into how somebody does what they do at a really high level. Whether or not you're into hip-hop or not, or you're a musician or not, I think you're going to really find this interesting. He's a really cool guy, and I had a really good time talking to him and kind of opened my eyes to some stuff that I didn't realize, which is what I love about being able to do this podcast. So enjoy it, and keep giving us reviews on iTunes. That always helps. So if you're enjoying this, please go put a little note there. That's always awesome, and we'll see you next week. Really psyched to have on the show platinum-selling hip-hop artist Mad Child, also known as the Underground King. He's got a new album that's just dropped, The Darkest Hour, and we're going to talk about that and a whole bunch of other stuff. Hey, man, thanks for being on the show. Really excited to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. We're doing this... I'm in New York, you're in L.A. It's a little early for you, so I appreciate you being up, having a little coffee.
Oh, good. Drinking my Monster and coffee here.
There you go. That'll keep you going for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, just in following you and knowing you and, you know, just some of the things that you've said in the past, you know, I just wanted to, longevity in this world that you're in seems to be important to you. But also growth. And you said that you want to, this is your quote, preserve the culture while progressing. What does that mean for you, and do you still feel that way?
Absolutely. This is an interesting time in hip-hop. And, you know, when I was a kid, I promised myself I was never going to become that grumpy old man that was like, my era was better, you know, so I've always kept an open mind, always tried to keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on. We're in a very oversaturated world right now because it's so easy to put out music and make videos, and there's just a ton of talent out there because of the internet. So it's hard to keep up with everything, but I get the gist of what's going on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, hey, hip hop to continue, it has to continue to evolve.
Yeah.
It just has to. Whether we love the direction it's going in or not, it still has to evolve.
Yeah.
And things always turn corners and come back in cycles. So it's just a ride that we hip hop's been going through. But I still think that what's happening right now is important because change is important for something to stay interesting and stay alive.
Right, but you've also liked to, what you said, stay in your lane, and, you know, you've talked about Kendrick Lamar, who's sort of, you know, kind of emphasis on lyrics and lyricism, and I know that's important to you, and, you know, Danny Brown and people like that. So, like, how do you...
Chance the Rapper, I think, is another great example of, in a world that seems to be like, getting into this weird Satan rap and you know, some of this ridiculous men wearing dresses and shit getting a little bit too much. It's dope that guys like Kendrick and Chance the Rapper, who are on top, are like taking back some of like where this culture came from and like putting out positive messages and still killing it and doing it in a cool way with edge, so people are still accepting it. I really appreciate that, so I wanted to mention.
So how do you do that? I mean, because that's tricky, right? Like, so you're always playing to a young culture, right? So that if they're into the Satan stuff, and like you just mentioned, how do you pull them back to, I don't want to make you sound old, but I'll say old school a little bit in a good way, right? Like, how do you pull...
How about experience? Let's call it experience.
Yeah. How do you pull them back to sort of, hey, to show them, hey, there's some other stuff that sort of laid the groundwork for this that you should appreciate too. How do you stay relevant to them, or how do you get them to sort of look back a little bit and appreciate the stuff that you're doing in addition to sort of what is the, whatever the newest trend is right now?
Well, because dope is dope. You know
right.
what I mean? And I'm dope.
Yeah.
Like, I snap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's simple as that. Like, whether you fuck with the style of music that I'm making right now or not, you're still going to watch my shit and be like, he's still snapping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
As long as I'm still killing shit, I got a voice in this game.
Yeah.
I think it's important not to speak on it too much and just let it ride.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, I can put out little subtle messages here and there, as long as it's got edge and it's not corny. You just don't want to cross that line of looking corny. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to, this, you know, I won't say any rappers' names, but being a trying to be a teacher or something right now, that shit ain't gonna work.
Yeah.
It's not gonna work.
Yeah.
Just, people are just on some other shit right now, so you just ride with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's certainly.
And then you just do your part where you can, but just throw in a little bit of advice here and there for kids that want to listen, and just keep it rocking, keep it moving. My life's great. I got classics. I ain't got to worry about shit. I tour the world, so
yeah.
I just keep going.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me.
Well, you talk about, like, you know, that there's, and again, we don't have to mention names, but, you know, whether it's hip-hop or any art form, people losing their fierceness, you know, like they maybe get a little soft, they do an album or two, and then maybe become, like, sort of wrapped up in the material things too much or something, or lose focus. So, like,
or life or whatever. They just make music their eighth priority when it used to be their first priority for many different reasons.
Yeah.
They might have five mortgages and they're taking care of all their people around them, and they got moms, and they got baby mamas, and they got wives, and they got mistresses, whatever the fuck the situation is. When you get money, that should just happen. People come around you. I've been through these, you know, I've ridden two big waves. So I've been through this cycle, and I know what it's like. You know, everyone around you, when shit cracking.
Man.
You know what I'm saying? When that wave kind of comes to an end and you're waiting to catch the next wave, things quiet down a bit.
Man.
So that's when you get a chance to sort of evolve and, you know, get to know yourself a little bit better. And you know, like you say, with experience, you do change a little bit, but you also want to keep that edge. You know what I mean? I want to keep that young me alive to a certain degree, but I also have to be, you know, it's time. You also have to be man up and be like I got to handle life a little differently right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you, when you're writing and you're starting to get sort of, you know, ideas for your next album or songs, like what are you, you're obviously listening to everybody else. Like, I'm a comedian, right? So I'll hear other comedians, and I love hearing other comedy, but, like, you also don't want to sort of be too influenced by it, so then suddenly by osmosis or subconsciously you're starting to sound like that other person. Like, do you kind of have to fight that off a little bit? And then how does your process work in terms of what do you have to have an incident or something that happened in your life to really spur you into a song, or so will something just hit you out of the blue? Like, how does it come for you, and how do you work through
it? Okay, that's like five questions, so let's go
back. Yeah, take any of them.
Let's go back to the first one.
Yeah.
Can you say that one again?
Because I
want to answer everything you just said.
Yeah, no worries. How do you not sort of get influenced in your work when listening to other artists that you respect and admire, but not start to sound like them?
Okay, so when I'm just living life and I'm going to the gym, or I'm going to a club, or I'm driving my car, I listen to what's cracking today. Like, I'm an underground rapper, so I might be listening to Sick Jackin and Necro and Vinnie Paz one day, but then the next day I might also be listening to Drake and Future and Chance the Rapper or new Jay-Z album or whatever, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I like hip-hop, a lot of hip-hop, what's going on right now, and I like to stay... I like a lot of what's happening in new music. Like, I can't wait to hear Lil Wayne's new album.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, you're right. For me to try to change and switch shit up right now, it would be not a good look, I think.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like I have my own style.
Mm.
There's been times where people were emulating what I'm doing. So I'm already me. Nobody else sound like me. I went through the stage as a kid of emulating another rapper, then getting through that phase, finding my own style, creating my own style, developing it. And now I'm me.
Mm.
So it's very important that Mad Child doesn't change. But it doesn't mean I don't want to make relevant music.
Right.
It doesn't mean that I don't want to make music that works with what's going on today. So I've actually got some new material that I think is really interesting, where it's a balance of what's happening today, but I don't switch up what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The mathematical equation or the formula of the way that I write and the way that I spit doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. We'll test the waters with that. But when I'm writing and I'll switch to, like, Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson and Ben Harper and a completely different type of music. That way I sort of find, these are some of my favorite artists, Bob Dylan, you know, whatever, Black Sabbath. I'll switch to that kind of music, Led Zeppelin, and completely zone out from what's happening right now so as not to be influenced.
Wow, that's really
by
cool.
accident.
So
yeah, and that just takes me back to a place of where I come from
yeah.
as a kid, and music that I've loved for many, many years.
Yeah.
And that just takes me back to me, because to make true art, to make real art, you have to dig deep and bring out what's from within to make real art.
Yeah.
So when I'm making real art, I'm not tripping on what the fuck people think about what I'm saying. I'm not even thinking about anything. Like, when I'm in my zone, I'm just writing my inner thoughts.
Yeah.
So you're just going to get honesty on a plate. If you fuck with it, you fuck with it.
Yeah.
If you don't, then you got bad taste. You know, it's not my fault.
Right. Yeah, well, that's how you stay you and only you, if you're speaking from a place of inner thoughts. And, you know, sort of originality comes from that sort of desire to sort of talk about what's going on in your life in a real way. I think whether you're an actor, a musician, an opera singer, or a comedian, it's all the same idea. And I think that you know, the challenge is, like you said, we're in a business as performers and artists and creative people where we want people to care about what we think about what we're doing, but not so much to the fact that we're like writing to cater to them. You know, there's that fine line. Do you find that's a fine line for you too?
I just try not to think about that when I'm writing. I just get into a zone, and like I said, I don't think about that shit. I just want to make myself happy, because that's always been the formula. When I make myself happy and I want to listen to my album over and over again after I've made it, that seems to have always worked. So that's just the formula I stick with. I make shit for myself first, with the subconsciousness always with me, that I am who I am, and I'm confident that the people, the loyal supporters and fans that I've had over the years, and the new ones that I'm getting, which I appreciate you all. Thank you very much. And, you know, of course there's that subconscious that, hey, this is what my people fuck with for sure. And then what I think new fans can fuck with. But at the end of the day, I'm making music that I like, and I'm writing what I feel like. I'm like, oh shit, I just wrote that, okay, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it becomes fun, and you just get in your own kind of competition game with yourself, and I just keep it as simple and pure as that.
Yeah, well, I think your fans appreciate that too, because I feel like in listening, you know, to your stuff going back, you know, for quite a while now, you can kind of, as a fan of yours, you can grow with you, right? Like, people see your growth. You go through the good times, the bad times. I mean, this album talks about, you know, it's the darkest hours. It's sort of, you're dealing with, you know, addiction and all of that. And was it hard for you to, like, finally get that out there and talk about it through your music in terms of what you went through?
I feel like it's time to just air it out.
Yeah.
You know, like, if anybody thinks, like, or questions like the few times where I've screwed up and taken L's, hey man, I that was relapsing. Like, let's just put it out there and be honest. You know what I mean? It's sobriety is not to be taken lightly. Like, just because you've been sober for 3 years don't mean you got it. You got to stay on it. You got to keep working. So I relapsed a few times. I gotta man up and just, you know, admit it and be honest and just be like, you know, I'm doing cool now. I'm on a better path, and we're just gonna keep it moving. And I don't have a time machine.
That's hard. That's especially in this business. Like, it's one thing if you're an alcoholic or you're addicted to drugs, and you're like an accountant, where during the course of your day it's not like right there. But like in the world that we're in as performers, it's the stuff is everywhere whenever you want it. How do you like not? You know, and then you got enablers too, right? Like, there's those people that go, hey man, I'm gonna offer this guy, you know, some Percocet or whatever, this or that, and he'll think I'm dope, and we'll hang out, and we'll be. How do you, like, do you have people to help you separate yourself from that, or how do you stay away from that?
Now, you know what I mean? When at the end of the day, you're on your own, unless you're making fucking $20 million a year.
Yeah.
You know, then
you're gonna
might
have
some. Yeah. You know, to be honest with you, I don't fuck with coke and shit like that anymore because, and people offer that shit to me all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, yeah, your eyes are bulging out of your head and you look like the Cookie Monster right now. I'm good. I'd like my dick to work tonight. Yeah. Thank you very much for the offer, but I'm going to go,
I'm going to go
hang out with this girl. I don't find it that difficult. I don't have like a craving to do like drugs when I'm out on tour and shit like that. And to make it clear, one thing I want to make clear is I've never relapsed on the drug that took me down. I'm an opiate addict. So since the day I quit opiates, I have never done them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make that clear just so there's no confusion in what I'm saying. But that doesn't mean I haven't fucked around and done some other stupid shit just because I have.
Yeah. No, I hear you, man. It's out there. And like, how did... What was it? Was there sort of like a, what they say, a rock bottom for you where you said, I this shit's got to stop? Or how did you sort of find
yeah, it's called losing $4.5 million.
That'll do it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, that wakes you up. But, you know, some people don't even wake up from that. I admire you, man. And how has it been sort of, working with, I know Evidence produced this late album yours, and how was that for you, and what did that do for you in terms of helping you step up your game and all of that?
You know, I always admired Evidence as a friend and as a producer and as a rapper.
Mm.
He's always been someone who has stayed very consistent, stayed in his own lane. He's been an inspiration for me. So, as a homie, when he was like, let's make a record, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, that's on the bucket list for sure, So, just getting to go over to his house and the process of making the album was nothing but a pleasure, mm-hmm.
Was there any...
I don't really know what else to say. It's just it's a dope album. It's for purists. I think everyone's going to be like, hey, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Some real shit.
Yeah, no, people are saying great things about it. And you just had a gathering, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
The gathering of the Juggalos. Mm-hmm. Shout out to all the Juggalos. And thank you, ICP, for having me once again.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real loyal fan base that I'm very, very conscious and aware of. And if anybody that talks smack about Juggalos, I got their fucking back, homie. Like, they got my back for real. Like, they've embraced me and shown me nothing but love. And,
through all of it, right? Through all of it,
through
right?
all of it. They don't turn their back on you, man. Once they fuck with you, they fuck with you. So I fuck with them heavy, and I'm proud to be a part of that community, and I'm thankful.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about family, and, you know, you've talked about, like, sort of, you know, being in gang and sort of how that kind of, you know, got in the way. You had trouble getting back in America for a little bit there because you were tied up with the Hell's Angels, or they said you were, or whatever. But then you kind of, now, you know, you kind of recognized that was kind of a fucked up way to be with gangs and shit. But it's sort of mesmerizing in a way, I think.
Well, let's clear one thing up, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a club. It's a motorcycle club.
Right,
not
right.
A gang.
Right.
And I respect my past.
Right, right.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was nothing but great to me. Mm-hmm. So I want to make that very clear.
Sure.
I did not necessarily recognize that it was a fucked up way to be. That's not the case. I was given a choice.
Yeah.
It's like, go be an island and you can get a second chance, or continue on the path you're on and... You know, you're not allowed to come into America. I talk to the homies, I'm gonna tell you right now, without getting into it too deep, everybody was supportive and saying, "Go get your life back, Maddie. Go, you know what I mean? Go
ahead.
We trust you. It's all good." So I want to make sure that everybody understands that.
No, it's not so much. I'm not focusing on Hell's Angels, but the idea, the thing that's really great about this story is that you talked about, like, you know, you see stuff like Goodfellas and Scarface and stuff like that, and you're a kid, and you're like, it gets romanticized, and you think, hey, this is the way it's going to be, and then, and whatever gang you want to talk about, or I'm not picking any names in particular. Then they, you sort of get into that world, and you said something to the effect of like it's a family. But the fucked up thing is, it's one thing to be a family; it's another thing to be a family where they expect you to do certain things that really aren't good for you or society, and you have to know how to separate that and get away from that. And just like with your drug problem, sort of like you seem to like be able to snap yourself out of this stuff and go, you know what, I got a better path to be on, and I'm really impressed with that.
And for me to do that, I had to just go be on my own.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That had nothing to do with anybody else. Who I hung out with had nothing to do with my drug problem. Me, I only had something to do with my drug problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and you know, if I've said something like that in the past, then that was wrong for me to say, because everybody was very supportive and was like, Matt, you're the artist.
Mm.
You do what you do. We got your back.
Right.
We do what we do. So let me clear up that misinterpretation if I've said something along those lines in the past. Nobody made me feel like I had to do something I didn't want to do.
Right. Yeah, no.
I just had a fucking great fucking decade. It was a blast, bro. I mean, it was fucking the funnest 10 years of my life.
Yeah.
It's just as simple as that.
Yeah.
But you got to, sometimes you got to move on and say, okay, that maybe just, you know, I'm an artist and that's who I am. And this is where I'm at in life. And this is me, man. I mean, Mad Child, I'm Mad Child.
Yeah.
So in order for Mad Child to be Mad Child, I got to go be able to tour Europe and America and Australia and the UK and Japan and Mexico. It's just as simple as that. It's just that.
Yeah, and you crush it, man. You'll do like 180 days with hardly any break, like 180 shows with hardly any break. I mean,
Thank you.
How do you maintain that? You know, I do stand up, but it's not at that. Not that level of like intensity, like, and you're putting out a lot of energy up there. How do you stay fresh from show to show?
Well, I work best with a schedule, mm-hmm. so I love being on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to travel with my little dog Lola,
mm-hmm.
so I've always got my family with me. Unless, you know, in North America, I'm able to travel everywhere with her, so that makes it a lot easier for sure.
Yeah.
Always having your best friend with you at the hotel room when you get back.
Absolutely. I know that feeling, man. You come back, it's all alone. Like, you're with everybody all night, and then it's like 2:30 in the morning, and then you go, you wonder why people can get in trouble on the road, right? Like, you're wired, you're awake, and, like, you're all alone in your room. But anyway, I totally get that.
It's called Girls and Netflix.
You can't blow $4.5 million on Netflix, though. That's a lot of Netflix.
No, right? Those days are over, homie. You know what I mean? That's why I said now it's called Girls and Netflix.
Yeah, gotcha.
It used to be called Girls and something else.
Yeah, now. Girls and this and that and the other thing. So that's
great. If a girl's good at a massage, she's welcome to hang out with me.
I hear you. So that's nice. You got the dog, you're hanging out, and then you, that's rare to hear that, you know, an artist doing what you do likes a schedule, because a lot of times, you know, again, regardless if you're a musician or whatever, I think like some people just like to, hey man, I'll do it when I want to do it, kind of thing. But that really helps you to be sort of to know A, B, and C is happening, huh?
Yeah, and it gives me a purpose, bro. Like, when I get home and I got, like, a month before I go back out again, you can't really dig that deep into something in a month's time.
Mm.
So, honestly, like, it's like I want to go tour the world, and then moving forward, I want to go, like, tour the world, go do, like, tour for 5 months straight, and be like, now I'm going to take 5 months off. I'm going to fucking work on me. I'm going to work on my craft.
Right.
I'm going to fucking come back and fucking start swinging.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hit people over the head. So that's how I'm going to move forward, just because I'm getting to know myself better.
Yeah.
And it's like when I get these small breaks, sure, I get work done, but I could be a lot more productive if I knew I had a certain window of time to really dig in. Really, really get on a gym schedule, really get on a good schedule, work on self-improvement in all dynamics, especially my music.
Yeah.
So, and I like, I like being in hotel rooms, man. I like walking into a fresh, clean room, throwing my shit everywhere, and then the next day going to a hotel and it's all clean and set up. And like, I feel more comfortable in hotel rooms than I do in my crib, to be honest.
That's funny. There's a buddy of mine, Tom Rose, who's a comedian, and he pretty much just tours the world. He stopped for a little while. Now he's based in L.A., and he just literally lived out of a hotel for a number of years. He went from hotel to hotel. He said the same thing. I go in, it's clean. I go out in the afternoon. I come back. My room's clean again. I don't. If I want to talk to somebody, I can. If I don't want to talk to anybody, I don't have to. It's like a real, real like simple, clean life for him. He really, really liked this. Said the almost exact same thing. And do you find when you're on the road touring with that level of intensity, you're also kind of sort of writing the next piece for you, or the next album? Are you starting to jot down notes? Is shit hitting you, or are you totally focused on what you're doing for that particular tour and album?
When I'm fully focused, I'm trying to hit the gym for a little bit in the hotel, and when I'm watching movies or whatever, I'm gathering, you know, I'm gathering wordplay or arsenal, and I'm doing my shows when I'm fully focused, you know what I mean? Then there's some tours when I'm just focused on the tour and just trying to enjoy the moment and, you know, have a little fun and, you know what I mean? But I make sure that I show up on time for every show and do my best to be professional and fucking rock the stage and fucking say hi to the fans and you know what I mean? So I'm fully, when I'm on tour, I don't play.
When you say gather wordplay, because I'm fascinated by process, especially for people who are artists like yourself. Cool. What does that mean? Like, how do you gather wordplay? Are you just sort of, are you listening to conversation? Like, what? Explain that to me a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it would be, I'm listening closely when I'm watching movies, and if I hear something that sounds poetic, I'll write it down. It's as simple as that. That's the way I've always written. I've always gotten my words and ideas from watching movies. I love watching movies. Yeah. So, I probably, you know, I watch one a night, at least one a night.
Yeah. And that'll
usually just one a night, but I watch a movie every night. And I usually get something somewhere out of that movie, and I'll write it down. You know, sometimes you'll just hear someone say something and be like, that's dope. I don't really read books. I want to try to start reading. I think it'd be a good thing for me. I imagine that once I start reading that, I'll probably find little words and quotes and sayings out of that.
You know, there's
flip that and turn it into your thoughts.
Yeah. So usually that, whatever that phrase is that you grab, you feel like there's something intrinsically that connects with you or something you might want to say. And so probably that's why you grab it, I would imagine, right?
Like, yes, it connects with me and my identity and my personality. It connects with me as a person. Yeah. And I know that I can work with that, and I could flip it and then turn it into something with a dope word combination where it all ties together and makes sense, and it's me giving it back out to the world. So I'll hear like one line, but then I'll flip it into 16 lines.
Wow.
But that one line's like sparked off the whole verse. That makes sense?
Yeah, no, it's kind of similar, like for me anyway. Like, I tend to be very like about my what's going on around me, and I'll hear somebody say something or read something, see something on TV, and it'll spark an idea for a joke, or it might tie into something that I was thinking about doing and help complete a joke or an idea that I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like for me, like, I kind of have to always be open to everything around me, whether I'm on the subway or I'm in the market or even in the shower. Like, it sounds corny, but like
taking it in. No, that's not corny.
You know,
I get it.
And then it just sort of kind of sits with you. Or I was talking to this guy, Tom Fontana.
That's dope to hear. Sorry to jump in. To hear, because when you're keeping your mind open at all times like that and letting creativeness come in, that's when you're in your best place as an artist, and you're an artist as well. So, I guess a comedian is an artist,
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, an artist is somebody that's speaking from a real place and is putting something out there that either gets people to think a different way about something or look at something one way that they thought was one way but see it a different way. Like, I feel like if I said to you, what did you do today? And you said, I went to a museum, I saw an art exhibit. And I said to you, how was it? And you were like, it was all right. then is it art? If it didn't move you to another place, if it didn't take you to a transform you to some way, or it wasn't sort of just some way kind of change you in some way, then is it art? So I feel like there's lots of different kinds of art. It could be a sculptor, it could be a comedian, it could be a musician. But what you guys do in terms of being able to hear words and lyrics and sounds and put things together, I'm fascinated by it, but I got to be open to it. Like, there's this guy.
Well, right back at you is what you do. You know, I mean, I've had my time of cracking a few friends up, but to constantly make people laugh, that's an incredible gift. So yeah, right back at you.
There's this guy, Tom Fontana. He's a writer. He created the show Oz on HBO, and he has a writing process. It's actually cool. It's on my show. You might want to listen to it as a writer. I think you might appreciate it. He gets up at like 5 o'clock every morning and writes for 3 hours or 5 every single morning of his life. And I said, why? He goes, because when you first wake up, you're still in that kind of semi-dream state. And he said, that's when I get some of my best stuff. He goes, I'll read – before I go to sleep, I'll be in bed and I'll read some of my notes and things that I want to try to write about. And I let it kind of absorb into my subconscious. And then I wake up, and in that time frame, he said, I feel my mind's really fertile and shit comes out. And so.
That is incredible.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing. Everybody's got their own thing, but
but I get that. I was going to just add to that. When I'm fully in my zone and fully in writing mode, I literally wake up every morning and there's like a dope line in my head. I don't know if it came from like my dream or something, but I'll wake up with a dope line.
Yeah.
Every morning when I'm really, like, really in writing mode.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm just totally in tunnel vision and creating my art. I'll wake up every morning with, like, a dope line, and I'll write it down, and that'll kick off the day for me. So I totally get that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very respected thing to be able to sit and write for 3 hours every day. You know, I think that's
that's pretty
a great habit to continue, because you're constantly staying sharp.
Yeah, absolutely. And he said the same thing, like sometimes something will happen in a dream and he'll remember part of the dream and that'll end up in a script. And he's very disciplined, but he, you know, everybody's got their own thing. But for me, like it sounds like with you, like I'm constantly open to stuff. I'm constantly trying to keep my mind open. And I might take a nap, and like sometimes just before I have a show, I might take a nap in the late afternoon. And before I fall asleep, something will hit me on a thing that I was thinking about, and I have to get up and write it down. And I think it's because like I'm letting it go, and it just kind of comes in. It's really fascinating shit to me. I agree how it all works. Hey, tell me about Battle Axe Warriors real quick. I want people to know about this, because I thought this is a really nice thing that you did for sort of as another way to kind of, for especially young people, to look at life and approach life.
Yeah, it's something that a friend of mine now is running, just because. You know, shout out to Rocco. He's running the whole thing now because he just has the passion for it. I mean, I watch this guy talking to the Battle Axe Warriors and Dimes all over the world. He's organizing the divisions all over the world. I think we're in 65 different places. It's really inspiring, and I was like, you know what? Like, I don't have, as much as I'd love to, I don't have time to talk to people for 12 hours a day and do all this organization. And and he just really loves it and really cares about it. So he's sort of running that show now. But I did come up with the idea. I did create the concept, and I'm proud of what it's become. I'm proud, you know, I'm still a Battle Axe Warrior, of course, and I'm proud to be a part of that family. And it's just, the concept is that, you know, give people a family to join without having the devil behind the curtain, man. It's just like, you talk about, you were talking about sometimes you're expecting, and that's probably where you've read or heard me say, sometimes people expect you to do things.
I just
wanted to make it clear that wasn't the situation in my personal life, but I am aware that in some cases with that type of situation,
there is
that going on, absolutely. So that is a big part of what we don't do. One thing we ask people to do is conduct themselves with respect, and you know, I've screwed up on that in the past, and having this foundation really helps remind me that, hey, I'm not just representing myself here. I'm representing a whole lot of people that believe in me or believe in this family, and I need to make sure that I make every one of those family members proud of what I'm doing. So when I let myself down, I'm letting them down as well. So it's a really nice thing to have in my life on a personal level now, because these people are so inspiring. Some of these people come from the streets. Some of these people come from, living on the other side of the fence, and then decide that that's the move for them. So, that, you know, there's some people that have lived some life in this family, and then there's some people that just enjoy the music and yeah. want to be part of something positive. And I don't think there's anything corny about having a family that's focused on positivity, focused on self-respect. Focused on trying to do things the right way. And I mean, these guys do charities, and these ladies do charities, these girls, sorry, whatever, ladies, do charity work all over the planet, man. Mm-hmm. Like, how is that not a great thing? Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It started off with just hip hop, and now it's artists of all forms. So we have BMX riders and motocross riders and MMA fighters and rappers and musicians and all boxers, everything.
That's great, man.
It's just dope, man. It's
yeah.
dope to see it growing and evolving.
Yeah, it's important. You know, you're making a difference. It doesn't sound corny at all. It's actually important, and it's making a difference in people's lives. By the way, before we go, if you want to read a book, Dave Grohl's mother, Virginia Grohl, wrote a book and interviewed 18 mothers of other musicians, famous musicians, and about
wow.
what their kids were like as little kids and how, as parents, they fostered their kids' love for music. You know, some of these kids, school wasn't for them. I know school wasn't for you. You've talked about that. It's a
yeah.
really cool read. It's a great book, and I think you'd relate to it as a musician and as a guy that's been into music and an artist since, you know, you were a kid. It's just look up Virginia Grohl, you'll find the book. It's really cool. I think you'd like it, so just throw that
Virginia
out.
Virginia Grohl. I'm going to look that up. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, Dave Grohl's mom, and
wow.
he writes
sounds
a foreword.
Very,
yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. Tell people
–
so the album is out. It's doing great. Tell people you got the tour happening
yeah.
and what's going on. Where can they see you? Let's get that out there to people. What's
yeah, I'm super happy with the response. Thank you, everybody. And I really want to say thank you to all the people that – pre-ordered and bought the album now that it's out. Especially I've always been very fortunate. I have a really, really amazing core, like, fan base, and they always seem to support and buy my album when, you know, music's free. Like, it's just simple
yeah.
as that.
Yeah.
And I think I'm very grateful and very thankful that is the case, that they spend their hard-earned money to support me and actually buy the album instead of just listen to it.
Mm.
But to all the people that just listen to it, that's great too, man. I'm just happy people are enjoying it. I'm real, real happy with the results, and I think it's going to be a good ride. I got a world tour, you know, not a world tour coming up, but I'm going to tour. I'm just starting this American tour right now.
Okay.
I'm bringing Doobie Bandit out on the road with me.
Cool.
Sid from Slipknot is doing some of the shows with us. And then I'm going to do a co-headlining tour then I'm going to go to Australia. I'm going to do some shows with Swollen Members, and I'm going to do a handful of shows, solo shows. Then I'm going to Canada. I hope I'm allowed to announce this, but I'm going to be doing a co-headlining tour with Necro, which will be just nuts.
Yeah, man.
And then going to go to Europe. And I went to Europe a little while ago and didn't know how I was going to go, because it was kind of one of my first times headlining instead of just going out and opening for someone or like being part of a package.
Mm.
And even though they weren't all massive shows, we sold out every show. So
that's great.
That ended up being a great thing. So now that I'm going back, the amount of shows has doubled, so it's a much bigger tour. The rooms are all going to be a bit bigger. So that tells me something for sure. That could really start building out there. Europe is a great place.
Is it for the fans?
I'll be careful with the term real hip hop, but they're into the the whole culture of hip hop. Let's put it that way.
Oh, so, they have.
it's really cool. So yeah. So if you make the type of music that I make, or what the sort of circle of artists that I come from, mm-hmm. Europe still fucks with that music heavy. So
nice.
It's a nice place to build. And then, it's, of course, the same with the between the UK as well. So that's going to go all the way up until into December. So it's going to be a nice long run. And
then you got to get those 5 months off so you can regroup and write another great album, man. You got to get that.
That's the move. I might do one more U.S. tour after that, and then I'm going to take off some time and you know, make some new heat and come back swinging.
Well, man, you're a great guy. You got a great story, and you're doing all the right things the right way. You're a great artist. The album's The Darkest Hour. Go buy it. And go, you're all over the world, so there ain't somewhere they can't see you, so go check out Mad Child, and really, really great having you on, man, a real honor, I appreciate you being on
the
show.
Hey, man, it's been a real pleasure, you're a great guy too, man, I really appreciate it, thank you. I really enjoyed the interview, thank you.
Thank you, and pick up that book, I think you'll enjoy it, all right?
I'm gonna, all right, brother.
All right, man, take care, thank you.
Bye.
All right, that was Mad Child, cool guy, he and I need to hang together more. I think he would up my cool credibility factor by a whole lot. And I was glad that he was on and able to kind of, you know, give us an idea of what it's like to do what he does, and you know how his process works. And I thought it was really cool. Like, you know, that, you know, he'll watch movies and that'll sort of inspire him, or conversation will inspire him for lyrics and things like that. So anyway. Check out the podcast next week. Thanks for checking it out. And you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. And leave some comments over on iTunes about the podcast. Thank you, folks. We'll see you next week.
A Westwood One podcast production.